Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Shall we?
Let's.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Six Nations, Week 3, done and dusted, and that is where our focus is for this podcast. We'll have another podcast in your feed looking at domestic matters, grassroots matters, and everything else in the rugby world, but it's the rugbyest time of the year, so let's get into the Six Nations with JB.
Hello, Tim.
Is that some new CrossFit clobber you've got on?
It is, Bulldog Gear, my favourite UK-based brand.
Looking very good, JB.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Who's got his sexy voice on today?
Less sexy, more bit hungover, bit delicate.
I was going to say, was it?
Bit hoarse.
Yeah.
Good fun, though. Good fun. Yeah. Nice day in Twickenham. Nice day at the rugby.
Of course. We had a man on the ground there. Once upon a time, you'd have been there in hospitality, being wined and dined. But those are a long time. That was a long time ago now. Testament to the fact that the Canterbury clobber I got back in those great
days. When they used to like us.
Well, no, do you know what it was? It was I met through work. So they did some work with us at XFM and then just... That was where they...
That was the inn.
That's how the oil...
But then they moved, they moved to Nottingham and left us.
Wheel was oiled. Yeah, they had a baby and decided that it wasn't all about work and they left us. But no, testament to how long ago that was, I'm wearing a Canterbury top today that is now my painting top.
Wow.
I was out painting...
If anything sums up our relationship with Canterbury, it's now the fact we use their gear for painting.
Yeah. Well, it shows it's lasted a long time.
That as well, yes.
Right. Oh, I mean, if only we'd have hit record about 10 minutes prior to this podcast. What a wonderful chat people would have heard.
What content.
Amazing content.
Probably for the best we didn't.
Probably, yes. Right. Just a reminder, you can support us in a number of ways. One, just by listening, and thank you for that. Secondly, by hitting subscribe, leaving a 5-star review. If you really appreciate having a podcast there, and sometimes more than one podcast, 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday morning. Then you can support us at patreon.com/eggchasers as well. How was your trip to Twickenham, Phil? Tell us.
Good fun. Nice day. Went down. I didn't organise the hotels, but we were staying in Brentford.
Ooh.
And Brentford were playing at home, and we actually spent a nice couple of hours before the game in two different Brentford the football team pubs. With Brentford playing at home as well against Newcastle. So that was quite good fun.
Were you by the Brentford Stadium?
I didn't actually see the Brentford Stadium.
Because apparently it's right in the middle of something. So like when you are there...
Right next to the train station, set back from the main road that runs...
Is that right?
Right through.
So you didn't see it?
But didn't see it, but we can't have been far from the Brentford Stadium.
Sensed it?
Yeah, there's a lot of people wearing red and white striped kits.
Now... I've never really enjoyed myself in Twickenham to go to a standalone game. That is not entirely true.
You love the HSB Sevens.
Oh, loved it. I love being inside of Twickenham. Right, that is one thing. Being inside of Twickenham is.
Tell me about the rugby from the HSB Sevens, by the way.
Yes, there was some rugby played that day.
Yeah, there was the only game we really watched was the semi final of the.
Was it?
Semi-final of the...
Something?
Premiership.
Oh, the Premiership, yes. Yes, we got the Gloucester game on in Twickenham, which actually was a lot more faff than I expected. But anyway.
So
I've enjoyed myself in Twickenham. I've done a box in Twickenham for England Wales. That was phenomenal. But I don't really enjoy in and around Twickenham. How was it this weekend?
We arrived just about at kickoff. So we were in Brentford before, a nice pub called the Nelson, not far from the Brentford Stadium, but didn't get to see it. And then we arrived just before the game, a few pints during the game, and then went to the Bollinger tent afterwards.
Oh, hello.
Which was quite good fun. Expensive in the Bollinger tent, unsurprisingly.
Oh, that's the idea, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm surprised you don't like Twickenham, JB. We're talking about 80,000 pairs of mustard and bright red chinos and barber jackets.
Barber
and
tweed.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem is you just can't do anything, can you? Like, you can't get a beer. It's just everything is just...
You can't. It's you've just got a queue for everything.
Yeah.
But it's the same as any... You go to Murrayfield, it's the
not
same.
Not the same in Cardiff. I mean, yeah, there are queues everywhere, but you can find a pub pretty quickly outside of Cardiff.
Last time I was at Murrayfield, they ran out of beer before half-time. That was the Lions-Japan game.
Yeah, well, there was different times then. That was the time we don't talk about. So, overall, you had a good time.
Overall, good fun. Very nervy last 20 minutes or so in the rugby.
How was the atmosphere?
Atmosphere was decent. It was good when England were building a score, even though the rugby at times wasn't always brilliant. But it was quite nice just to see the scoreboard ticking over.
I agree. I liked 3-6, 12-15. I liked it.
Yep. Scoreboard pressure.
Would have liked to see a few more tries, but... you'll take it. I'll happily take that. But then the last 20-25 minutes, it just got flat.
Well, you know,
Wales got on top.
I was convinced Wales were going to win it.
Absolutely
convinced.
If the game had gone on two more minutes, I think Wales would have won that.
Yeah, I felt Wales threw it away around the 70-minute mark. There's a couple of penalties where Wales should be gaining momentum. And they just gave away silly penalties, and England sort of didn't do much with it, but they managed to stall Wales enough that it became safe.
Well, Wales' silly penalties is probably the story of the match from Wales' side.
Yeah.
In the first half, I don't actually know what the stats were, obviously, because I was in the ground, but it felt like it must have been about 8-1 at some point against Wales in terms of penalties. And some of them were dull, like the Liam Williams yellow card at the bottom of the ruck. That's just dull, and he knows he's done it wrong because he then starts holding his head.
I know that.
So you know he's done something stupid. He knows he's done something stupid.
I was just on that. He's such a heroic guy, so brave, and is tough as teak. I felt embarrassed for him that he started holding his head. Liam, what are you doing, mate?
That was bad. That compounds the error.
Yeah,
but then. So many, it felt like so many off the feet penalties given away, bit by both teams, but more by Wales, just at the ruck. And that's dull as well, because once you know the referee is going to be strict around holding your body weight at a ruck, just be strict. Just be strict yourself. It's not like he was inconsistent on that. I don't think the referee had the best game, but. He was the same for both teams. He was at least consistent for both teams. So.
Yeah, the first half was pretty dire. Do you agree with that?
First half?
I literally fell asleep in the first half.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough going. I mean, lots of reset scrums, which are usually fairly good, but they didn't seem to... They're not the sort of reset scrums where one team's just clearly on top and the other one's folding. You didn't really know what anyone was doing. And they didn't know what they were doing. And the ref didn't have the... Mouse to get it fixed, which was a shame. I think he should have warned them first up, and then started giving penalties.
Yeah, I could be on board with that.
But like, you've got to identify, haven't you, why you're giving the penalty. So if you're unsure, I think actually reset scrum is the right thing.
Yeah.
But if you can identify it and say, look, Ellis, stop doing X, Y, Z. But then he'd give a penalty against Genge, and then the next one he'd give a penalty against
Also,
the
wasn't there was one moment, it was the Liam Williams yellow card, and there was obviously a bit of a disconnect in communication between... The referee, Mike Adamson, and whoever was in charge of the clock. I don't know who runs the clock. Is that a separate person?
Is it not linked to his watch?
No.
Is it not?
Well, he has that as a backup. Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure, he does do this, but he says time off, time on.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I thought he was
when Liam Williams went off and then there was a lot of chatting going on, and there was maybe an injured player getting some treatment, the clock kept ticking. And so the time from Liam Williams going off to the ball being played... After the scrum and all the resets had finally happened, it was like about nearly 4 minutes of Liam Williams' yellow cards was eaten up out of that.
Yeah, that is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, and that was, and that was kind of symptomatic of the first half, which was not great to watch. Albeit, it was nice to see, and quite old school to see 3 points, 6 points, yeah. 3 points, 12. I liked it.
I'll take that. I'll take that because you've got to be able to do that. You've got to be able to build a score. And it's funny because this was an England win that felt a bit like a defeat for England. Mm. It's a negative win. But equally, it's not a positive defeat for Wales because they should have done more in that first half. They should have given fewer penalties away. And had they have not found themselves 12 points down at half-time, I think it was, and conceding all of those 6 penalties, 18 points, 3 yeah. penalties.
Well, Wales got 3 tries to 1, did they not?
Yeah, 3 tries to 1. And England obviously missed the conversion and missed a very kickable penalty. So it doesn't feel like a positive result for either team.
Do you know who got man of the match?
Yeah,
Magic Marcus.
Marcus Smith.
I know you do because you watch TV.
Oh, but right.
Yeah,
you did because you saw it.
I did. I was
gets
aware.
Gets announced at the stadium, isn't it?
Yeah. Did it? Okay. I was going to say, do you think watching him live, he deserved man of the match?
He had some nice touches. He built the score well. I don't think he had his best game particularly. I'm not sure how much of that was. So what I will say about Wales in terms of their positive side from Wales is their defence and organisation and work rate was excellent, and that helped shut down England. It made England a bit impotent.
Yeah.
As Wales, when they did get their chances, Cuthbert and Adams and Faletau, all looking, offering a level of something different in attack that England didn't seem to be able to get. Just because, and I'm not quite sure, because England have got great runners, they've got great ball carriers, but they didn't seem to be able to bring them into the game particularly well. And it's hard to know how much of that was. I've not watched the game back. I've seen the highlights again, but you don't really get much from the highlights. No. It's hard to know how much of that was Wales's very good, well-organised and hard-working defence, and how much of it was maybe a lack of spark in midfield. And we spoke about in the Scotland game where you have a lot of the back line playing out of position, then did look a bit.
And of course, the one name sluggish. We've not mentioned at this point, which ties into that, is the fact that Manu Tuilagi was named to start.
No.
And in a shocking turn of events, tweaked his hamstring.
It's not the Manu that I know.
There was about 4 hours in between him being announced and then it being announced that he was not going to play.
Look, I'll say this. Sale Sharks watch his training load very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure if Eddie is quite as judicious as that. And I think they might have pushed him too hard. I mean, it's speculation.
Yeah, I mean, that's total speculation.
It is, but I do know how careful that they are with Manu. At this point, though, I mean, you either have to pay him less, or that would be in the club scene, or you don't pick him for England. I don't think this can continue.
He is so brilliant when he's on form. He is like almost no other player on the planet. He's so disruptive and so dangerous that it's like the forbidden fruit. You describe it as the other day. You can't help but take a delicious bite of Manu Tuilagi.
Nibble.
He's a little bit like those. Is it sirens? The mermaids that would that would take the sailors down.
Yes.
He's like that, isn't he? He's
turns just, out to be manatees.
He just Manu-tee. He just swims up to the surface and just gives a little wink to Eddie in the boat, and he's. But it's not just Eddie, is it anyone? And I can totally understand the temptation. Leicester must look back at all the hundreds of thousands they spent.
Oh, millions. Millions.
Yeah. Millions.
I wonder if they feel like they're just released from a relationship that they never wanted to be in.
But they did want it, though.
But they did at the time.
They did want it.
Now she's gone. It's like, oh my God, what was I doing?
And maybe that's what those few years where they were signing players left, right and centre and chopping and changing coaches, it's like that was just the rebound. They were like, right, I'm going to play the field for a few years now.
Yeah.
Now I'm free.
It's the best thing that happened to Leicester.
Isn't it?
Manu leaving. Because you free up your salary cap.
Bad to say it, but it's true.
It is. He's such a talented player, such an amazing player.
Well, it's like him, Mario and probably Barbary are the three English players who just are completely different. There's no equal to them in the world. And it's, well, Barbary's not had a shot yet. I'm sure he will be fine. Mario is obviously legitimate there week in, week out.
I mean, and he was awesome again. It's almost like, I think he doesn't get given man of the match as much as probably he deserves, because it's just like, oh, it's just Mario being world class again.
Okay, so let's go back to the Marcus Smith point. Marcus Smith got man of the match. Not everyone is
happy. Player of the match.
Man of the match. not everyone is happy with this. But there again, he might not go to his best game. He got his largest points haul for England.
Yeah.
He kicked them to victory effectively. Scored every point.
Equal largest points haul.
For him?
Yeah. He scored the save against Canada.
Oh, did he? Yeah, there we go then.
But this was Wales in a Six Nations game.
The only other man to get any points was Don Brandt.
Yeah, he scored 80% of England's points.
And, you know, even though he didn't do amazing things with ball in the hand, I still love him with ball in the hand. I still love the way he straightens up and then gives the ball.
It is exciting watching him. And in the first half, he was coming towards us. We were at that end of the ground. And when he just gets ball in hand, and he does that kind of like little goose step
thing, yeah.
But then it's also, he's looking one eye for the gap, but also looking for the options outside him. Unfortunately, I think the options outside him maybe didn't have their best game this week.
When he does that goose step, you goose step to run, but he goose steps before he passes. So he always like...
Well, he could do both. That's the beauty of it.
The George Ford equivalent of this is the sideways... I'm trying to explain this now. George Ford has a pose where he looks like he's about to pass and then he runs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're
talking
about.
The George Ford, like, half crescent moon pose. So his hips are swinging out, ready to pass.
Yeah.
But he's still running. Like, he's got to pass soon. He's got to pass soon. And he doesn't pass.
And then he just accelerates.
Yeah. That's the same sort of thing.
So there was, I remember watching a little analysis of Roger Federer's serve years ago. And Roger Federer is a very good server of the ball, despite not being the fastest.
Prototypical fast server, 6'5".
He's not Pat Rafter.
He's not a super powerful server, but he has very, very good accuracy and win ratios. And the analysis was saying, most tennis players you can tell, based on their body position, whether they're going to hit close to the centre or wide, what type of shot they're going to do. And Federer, they had these stills, and he was in an identical position, and on one of them the ball goes straight down the middle, and on the other it goes out wide. And that's one of the things I think Marcus Smith does well, is that, and exactly with George Ford as well, when it looks like he's going to, basically he could do anything from any position, he could pass or run, and it's very difficult to read exactly what he's doing he's already done it.
Shane Warne's another one who's exactly the same. I remember people showing the side by side, and he'd have the one that goes straight on, the speed ball that just goes straight on, and you just don't know.
Yeah, because of cricket, and I'm talking out of school here because I know nothing about cricket. But allegedly, I think you told me this, Phil. Did they turn off the lights on cricket players?
They've done that with cricketers. And
do you know this story?
And Cristiano Ronaldo heading the ball.
Yeah.
So there was one of them where they, turn out lights with the cricket players. I think it was even before the ball was released, and they could hit the ball. They were predicting based on, I think Ross Tucker did this Science of Sport podcast. They were predicting based on where the bowler's arm was before he's actually released the ball.
Wow.
With accuracy.
Yeah. Wow.
Because the ball travels so fast that you don't actually have time to track it through the air. And there was a similar one with Cristiano Ronaldo, where this was years ago, they were crossing a ball to him and he was heading the ball into the goal. And then they'd start turning out the lights earlier and earlier and earlier, and he's still heading the ball into the goal.
Wow.
So if you imagine baseball, where they've got to go into the, got to throw it to a certain zone over and over again, you'd think it'd probably be harder than cricket, because cricket they can throw it anywhere or bowl it anywhere or whatever. But with cricket, but with baseball, you've just got to sort of predict that sort of square and then predict the speed that it comes out of the pitch, the pitcher's arm. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's the point, isn't it? That these players, Smith and Ford and the really top ones, can disguise it all.
Yeah.
They just disguise it.
It gets harder and harder to read.
Mm. So I think he's not fully deserving of Man of the Match. I'm sure there's someone who hit a lot more rucks, and without them, the game would have lost.
I don't mind it. It's great. And also, I don't think you should... I think if it was... I don't think we should be down on England because we just beat Wales in a Six Nations game.
Yes. It's a win in a Six Nations, good result.
There's room for improvement.
Not only was it a good result, it was a good result against a resurgent Wales. Mm. And I think I've seen lots of games like that where England have crumbled under Jones, and most notably Scotland at home when they drew. They threw away a massive lead.
Mm.
You know, it is positive. Also, I had my doubts about this Welsh team, and I suspect they're going to come true this Six Nations. They're not beating France anytime soon. Are they?
France.
Are they? I don't know.
France won't have been worried by either of these teams looking at that.
We'll get onto them in a minute. Sam Fitzpatrick. You say your point.
I was going to say, I think we just need to pay a massive tribute to, I was going to say Ollie Cuthbert. It's not Ollie Cuthbert. I went to school with him.
Alex Cuthbert.
Who had a game from about 10 years ago?
Yeah, this was like 2013 vintage Cuthbert.
He was bloody brilliant.
On his 50th cap.
Yeah.
Getting it done.
At a time when he might not have got a game. That said, Lewis Rees-Sammett was sent back to Gloucester, and now you can understand why.
Fair play, Wayne Pivak,
because a lot of people...
Yeah, that is a bold call.
I thought Pivak was playing politics. I really thought he was playing politics. Look, you play for Gloucester... It's hard for me to get the time that I need with you. Get your life into gear. Go play for Dragons. That's kind of what I thought he was trying to say to Zammit. I think you're right, which is, Cuthbert was, it was a brave call. This is a man who I actually thought was done, and that's how Exeter picked him up.
Mm.
I thought Exeter picked him up because it's just a throwaway gamble, but he looked like a true world-class international.
He looked like a Lions winger.
Yeah, did Faletau. Looked like a Lions player.
He did.
Faletau, he's so good. He's a bit of the Manu element because he's so frequently injured, but he always seems to pull it out of the bag for Wales.
I know I've asked this question before. What goes on at Bath? What goes on at Bath?
Sam Fitzpatrick is someone who contacted us, emailed contacteggchasers@gmail.com, said, I bet you've had some hot takes flying in right now. Yes, there were a lot of people who were writing as the rugby was on, but I'll chuck a couple more on the fire while I'm here.
Yes,
just one point, he says, on Randall, and this is Sam's take, I'm interested to think, particularly Phil, as you were there, what sense you got. He says, I like him, but he's not fit enough for Test rugby yet. Zippy when he's on the ball, but painfully slow getting to it.
I don't know. I'd have to watch it again. Maybe he's right.
Yeah, I've not.
I bet this guy's a scrum off.
I've not noticed that,
but you've got to remember, so who's writing this against him?
Sam.
Yeah, I bet Sam's a scrum half, because scrum halves notice things like this in other scrum halves. It's a very it's a very picky fraternity. And I didn't notice that at all.
No, I didn't, but...
But it is fair to say that it would be a massive step up in intensity. I mean, if your first international game was, say, the fourth game or the third game in the autumn series against
Tonga,
well, then you might be okay.
Yeah.
But Wales in the Six Nations at home, yeah.
Wales are a fit team.
Yeah,
they do work very hard.
Another one of the new faces in England is the subject of Ben Richards' email, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Straight after the game, he wrote this. Evening, gents. Listened religiously for the podcast for 5 years, blah, blah, blah. Wanted your thoughts on Freddie Stewart. I love him at the back. I feel he brings a solid defence, but confused by his attack. He is a BSB. He is a big strong boy. Yet seems a mazy runner, more akin to Mallins and Daly. With Tulangi out, I thought we might see him hit some harder lines every now and again, but he seems a little hesitant. I 100% think he's our best option, by the way, since peak Mike Brown. Unreal in the air. Ben in Cambridge.
I agree with most of what is said there.
Yeah, I really like him defensively and in the air. I kind of wish he was a tiny bit more explosive as a runner.
Sorry, when you say, do you mean defensively in the air, not defensively and in the air?
Well, I do mean defensively and in the air. Okay. I think he's very solid, both under the high ball and defensively.
So I think for the Josh Adams try, he was complete. I don't think he even saw Josh Adams. That's the only way I can describe that defending.
Was he the last man?
I think he was, but he was sort of offsetting the line, and his hips were turned in.
Was he not focusing on Cuthbert inside?
I think he just didn't see Josh Adams. There's no way you defend like that if you know the guy is on the outside. There's just no way.
Well, if he's got two guys, you've got to pick one of them in that scenario.
Yeah, but I have to watch again. But from what I remember, he's so flat-footed and he's so angled in on Cuthbert that I just think he's completely missed him. Whether Josh Adams started off the field or something, I don't know. But there was, you know, it was not good defending. You've got to see. Have you seen the replay?
I'll just get it up now.
And you'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
It is bizarre how bad it is. It's so bad, I don't think he's seen him.
Let's have a look at this now. So that's... Right, here we go. I'll get it up.
Here
so
we go.
We got it here.
Live video analysis. Interesting. Nerds.
Let me put the brightness up and a little bit of sound on for us.
Ooh.
Right, let's have a look. So this is the Rook centre field.
Okay. So there's another ruck here.
There we go, yeah.
So look how he's angling in.
Ooh.
He's caught in no man's land there.
Completely. Yeah.
So I thought he had picked Cuthbert, who was the man inside, but he's actually picked,
yeah, just
picked
looking at
no
it
one.
He was marking
Cuthbert, actually.
Well, all you could say on that is, you're talking about...
it's such a small gap that...
Yeah,
all you
could say on that, defensively, is when you're close to your own line, whatever you do in defence, whoever you hit, you have to get up quick. And actually, he does. Look, he hangs back. He should be there smashing. Even if he mispasses him, he should still be smashing the guy.
That's
hard.
Exactly what I meant about being offset from the line. So he's offset from the line. He's angry.
Yeah.
Now I
he's picked Cuthbert.
Do you think he's seen? He's even seen.
I think he recognises that he's a 2-on-1.
I wonder if he thinks he's so far out. Maybe he thinks he's so far.
If he was
out,
in the line, if he was in the line, he might be intercepting the ball. I think is the point. If he was blitzing, which is what you should. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. He's an international winger. I'm just a bloke sitting in.
I could have been an international winger. Things have gone differently.
But Phil, you were a winger at, you know, Championship National One level. My thought is you're close to your own line.
I agree.
He should be.
If the man outside. If they manage to get the ball to the man outside, you can't do anything about that. If you're a man down, you should just be blitzing.
To smash Cuthbert, two things happens. First, he smashes Cuthbert and he doesn't look like he's to blame. Second of all, I don't think the pass can be made because he's in that channel.
Yeah, you're right. He might be intercepting it.
And look at this. Now, I wonder if he thinks I wonder if he's got his pitch geography wrong. I wonder if he thinks he's so far out that he doesn't need to worry about Adams, if he has seen him, because he thinks Adams has to cut back inside to him. Because that is a tiny space.
Well, if he's going to do that, then sorry, but I recognise people are... You can't see the pictures. But what I would say is, if Malins is going to try and cover two people, he has to be on Adams's inside.
Mm.
And...
That's a shock. This is shocking defence. Whichever way you look at it, it's
actually
shocking.
Anyway, England have such turnover with their coaches. There you go. This is our audition. We'll do it, Eddie. And my defence session would be line speed, smash someone.
Yeah. Do you know, on Eddie and turnover, not turnovers, but the betting site Bet365 had one of those throwaway articles, which I just ended up reading today. And one of them was... Marlon Yard and why he doesn't play for England anymore. do you remember this story? Marlon, how are you? Bit tired. F off, mate. What? I don't want tired blokes. If you're tired, F off.
What's he been, what was he doing? Okay, so tired.
He'd probably driven 4 hours from bloody Manchester down to Penny Hill Park.
Yes.
Bit tired. What?
Oh, brilliant.
Nice, easygoing Eddie Jones.
Did you read the email from Dom, anyone?
I've read all the emails, but
don't open it.
I have not read.
Don't open it because it's put your emails away. Put your emails away.
I have not read it
because Dom Barfield. I think we haven't mentioned Ben Youngs, and much maligned sometimes by us.
Yeah.
And I think when we have done so, it's been qualified and fact-based, not just any sort of personal vendetta.
A bit of both.
But he is England's most capped rugby player.
Men's rugby player. Yeah.
The most caps player.
Because they're exactly the same things, and that's important that we remember.
And that is a phenomenal achievement.
Yeah.
It is.
Like, the last couple of weeks, there has been a bit of criticism about Ben Youngs, but, like, just take a couple of days off, boys. Like, just calm down. Let him enjoy his time in the sun. I do find it remarkable that of all the players that have played for England, it's Ben Youngs that is the most capped player. It's but incredible. Here he is, and fair
that,
play.
That,
well,
yes.
Well done.
It is a fact.
Yeah. Can't argue with that, can you?
No. Well, Dom Barfield has come up with a brilliant idea, and it's right up your street.
Okay.
So he says, Ben Youngs made his international debut in a dour 15-all draw against Scotland in round four of the Six Nations in 2010.
Okay.
Can you name England's starting team that day?
Oh,
I've got 2010. The squad.
2010.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
So I'm just going to tell you, Ben Youngs was on the bench.
Okay.
Gee.
Other than that, there are 21 other players.
So...
2010. What was the nearest World Cup to that one?
2011.
Okay, so let's use that as a basis. So we're not going Andy Gummersall. That would be too early.
Gummersall's not in there. Might have been Harry Ellis.
Danny Kerr?
Possibly, but...
Danny Kerr was scrum half.
Because Danny Kerr did go to... I want to say he went to the 2011, but he might not have done because he had an incident... where he got dropped for a little bit.
Yeah, no, this was fun, Danny Kerr. By the way, I was watching Danny Kerr on Friday. I think he's put on some weight. We need to discuss.
Oh, save that for the MWD, please.
Yeah, we're going to need to discuss this in detail.
Okay, so Danny Kerr.
So this is Cenotaph Danny Kerr, wasn't it?
So you've got
like the best version.
You've got one of the 15.
So it's either going to be Flood or Wilkinson at 10.
Johnny Wilkinson.
Okay, there you go, Wilkinson. Yep.
Was Flood on the bench?
Toby Flood was on. Taulupe Flood was on the bench.
Toby Flood has got. I'm going to look him up.
It's Tobias is his first name.
Yeah, he's got like five
Tobias
names, hasn't
Arthur,
he?
Arthur Reginald Cecil Flood.
It's something like that.
Yeah,
great name.
So yeah, you had Danny Kerr, Johnny Wilkinson were 9, 10.
Yeah, Tobias, Gerald, Albert, Cecil, Levy.
Cecil is one.
Leaven Flood.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's a man from money. Where's Barnard Castle School?
It wasn't Barnard Castle. It was one of the
was it not
posh northeastern schools.
Anyway, we are way off track here.
Yes. So you got wing centre fullback to complete the back line.
Wing centre
from 2010.
Jimmy Noone at 13.
No.
Hipkiss.
Nope.
Ayula Erinley.
Nope. Some great names though.
Tyndall.
Incorrect.
Oh, wow. Tyndall. Really, a real busted flush there.
Yeah.
Manu?
No, too early for Manu.
No, Manu.
Just too early for Manu.
12 years ago.
Okay, we're going to have to go deep now. So this is after... Sentence. It's not Andy Farrell. Cause it's after,
Ollie Barkley.
No.
Was Jason Robinson played 12 for England at one point? Oh, no, this is too late, isn't it?
This is 2010. I'll say one of the... one of the centres made his name in a game against... Well, not made his name. Is known for a game against Wales.
Matthew Tate,
13.
Ah.
Yeah.
And if you think it's 2010, so you can think the World Cup. Because it did...
The 2007 World Cup.
There was a 2007 World Cup. There's still some players...
No, Mike Catt's not still around then.
You'd be surprised. Mike Catt...
He played in 2007 and he was about 36.
That is right, yeah.
I think 12 is the hardest one to get.
Which club?
Think back three.
Okay, back three.
First.
Ugo.
Ugo, left wing.
Okay.
What's his name?
Cueto.
Cueto, yeah.
Mark Cueto, right wing.
Brown?
Not Mike Brown.
Oh, hang on. Wait. The centre. It wouldn't be your boy from Harlequins. You've met him.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
Double barrel surname, black fella.
No,
I don't think it is.
No. Oh, Jordan Turner Hall.
Jordan Turner Hall,
who retired. Yeah, no.
No. So you got 15.
We need to get
12 from 15.
Mike Brown.
Not Mike Brown.
And it's too early. It's too early for Good.
Yeah.
Foden.
Foden's a great shot.
Foden was on the bench.
Was he
number 22?
Okay, so he was the outside.
So
back.
You've got all the you've got the back replacements: Ben Youngs, Taulupe Flood, and Ben Foden.
Why are we so bad at this?
So no, it's tough. It's hard.
So the 50. Okay, let's move through the forwards.
Oh, is it? This is no. This is crazy. I was going to say Anthony Allen.
No,
that's a good shout though.
Billy 12 Trees.
I'll say the 12 wasn't born in England. The 15 spent a lot of time not playing in England.
A Bender one?
Not Benders. Right country for plying his trade, though.
Oh, Armitage.
Delon Armitage.
Delon Armitage.
Oh, God
of
damn
course.
It.
And the 12, not born in England.
Not Brad Barrett.
Not Brad Barrett, no.
Not born in England. Oh, Henry Ricky Flutie.
Ricky Flutie.
Oh, well done, Phil.
Correct.
Damn it.
Of course.
So back line was...
Should have got that earlier.
Danny Kerr, Johnny Wilkinson, Ugo Monier, Ricky Flutie, Matthew Tate, Mark Coito, Delon Armitage.
Not a classic, is it?
No, the pack.
Okay.
Do back row first. So Haskell.
Okay.
Haskell was 6.
Yeah. Then...
I know this isn't in order, but I'm going to say Borthwick played.
Borthwick did play.
Nice.
Wearing 5 that day.
So if he was 6, he'd be 8. 8, 8.
Easter?
Nick Easter, number 8.
Well done.
Very good. Minty.
It's not Minty. Croft, because he'd have been injured.
Correct. He only comes
it's
back
not
for
Wood.
World Cups.
I think Wood's
World
too
Cups and Laird's tours.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve Thompson played, probably.
He was on the bench.
Did Mark Regan play?
Nope.
No, that's too late for Regan, surely.
You never know. The boy, the little short guy. Mears.
No.
Mears is a good shout, though.
Yeah, because he was in the 2009 Lions tour, wasn't he?
Was he? Mears.
He went to South Africa.
Can't remember.
Stevenson?
Matt Stevens.
Stevens,
nope.
Even.
Nope.
Okay, this might be too early. Sheridan?
Nope. He'd retired, I think, or was injured.
Yeah, probably injured. Vickery will have retired at that point. Because Vickery went on the 2009 Lions tour, but that was a tour too far for him.
Too early for Corpus Hierro.
All I say is, I'll say Ben Young's... I'm just looking at...
Oh, Deacon. What about Deacon?
Lewis Deacon was the other second row.
Good
so
shout.
Lewis Deacon, Steve Borthwick with the locks. You've got James Haskell and Nick Easter in the back row. You're just missing the open side. And you've got none,
was
of,
Moody
the fr-
still
none of the front
then?
Row. Lewis Moody was on the bench.
Okay.
Who the hell was the open side?
I'm just looking. There
Reese?
Are...
Tim Reese?
No, not Tom Reese.
Tom Reese.
Magnus Lund?
There are players still playing Not Ben Youngs wasn't the only one there. We've obviously got Danny Kerr that we mentioned, but mm-hmm. in the pack there is one player still playing and one on the bench still
Dan Cole
playing. Dan Cole tight
Dan
head
Cole
prop.
Good shout. Yeah,
loose head could be God knows
the loose head I saw in a Tesco car park in Newcastle about a month ago.
Tesco car park in Newcastle.
When I was waiting, I was waiting for the delayed game due to the storm, and one of their coaches
definitely not. Well, David Flatman's only had one cap, and that was in America. So
and in about 2001.
So he's on the Newcastle coaching staff. Is my point? But you might
okay.
not know that.
Flipping heck.
So you got loosehead prop hooker, open side. And a few names and a couple of names on the bench.
I have no idea. Go on.
Hooker, you come on. You know the hooker. Pundit every now and again. Was a captain at one point.
Captain of England.
Were it not for his disciplinary record, he'd have had an absolute bagload of caps.
Hartley.
Dylan Hartley, yeah.
And Lions tours.
Lions tours and the rest of it.
Okay.
And the loosehead prop, Tim Payne.
Oh,
okay.
That might have taken some time.
T-Pain, yeah.
Yeah, and on the bench, Steve Thompson, you mentioned, Davey Wilson was the replacement prop when they only had one prop on the bench. We'll come on to that in a bit. And there was a very young man wearing 18 that day who was covering the lock position.
Mario.
he would have been very, very,
very
young.
Very young.
Courtney Laws.
Courtney Laws.
Big Court.
Wow.
Captain yeah. Courts.
So who was loose? Who was open side?
Old Joe Worsley.
Oh
God! Sakes.
Ben Youngs came off the bench to be the most.
Quite a big back row that.
Yeah.
And then also this question: who else has started at scrum half for England in the Six Nations since Ben Youngs' debut?
Okay.
Danny Kerr.
Danny Kerr, correct.
Randall.
Joe.
Randall, yes, correct.
Joe Simpson.
No.
Willie Hines.
Willie Hines, correct. So you've only got one. There's only one other scrum half that started since.
Spencer.
No, he hasn't started.
Started.
Oh, in the Six Nations.
In the Six Nations, yeah.
You're not going to get the last one, so I'll tell you. In 2012.
Wait. 2012.
Wait.
You play, do you want to know the...
Go on, give me the club.
Northampton.
Dixon.
Correct, Lee Dixon.
Oh, yeah, that would have taken a while without that clue.
Yeah. What's the question? Manu didn't make it to the field this weekend, though. If Manu had stayed fit since his debut and played all England games, not including British and Irish Lions, he would have more caps than all of them. He would have 125 caps. Do you know how many he actually has?
32.
45?
46.
Oh, well done. Nice. Not
I'm not going to... this. I might come back to some of those questions another time.
Sprinkle them in. Sprinkle them in.
I will. I'll pepper them in. Outstanding effort.
Maybe
really
be
appreciate
better
that,
answering
Dom.
Questions. They'd be...
we'd have more time.
We get a lot more. Get through. I'm not firing on all cylinders today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Well, let's hop to the game that's freshest in our memory from today. And I've just talked about back in 2010, there was only one prop on the bench.
Is there any point in talking about this? I mean,
there's two parts to this. There's the game, which was predictable, and the outcome was made all the more predictable by the event.
As a pride Ulsterman, you must be loving Mac Lowry.
Lowry. Love Lowry.
What's the point? There was no point. What a waste of a first cap for Mike Lowry. You know, that will be his first cap forever. And
two tries.
Yeah,
could have been three if he wasn't so unselfish. And
Andy Farrell said, "Well, you know, well done." Tells you the measure of the man. He's on for a hat trick.
I listened to that because I was painting more brickwork out the front of the house, and I had the phone in my pocket. As soon as the game finished, I went, "All right, I'm going to go out and do some more painting." So I listened to Andy Farrell, but I didn't see him. Was he wearing a suit?
I didn't watch.
I couldn't remember.
That's all I really care about is like the game. The game was so a non-event in the end that it was my main thought was Andy Farrell looking amazing in a suit
with
again.
12 players at one point.
Yeah, I know.
12 players, come off it. So let's put the game to bed because it's pointless. Throw it in the bin. Let's never talk about the game itself. Let's talk about the Laws.
Well, Mike Lowry, great debut, fantastic. I thought it was encouraging that Ireland got a bit of mojo when Johnny Sexton came on, and he's just even at his grand old age.
He's not that old, mate. He's got at least four more years. What is he now? 38? Yeah.
36, I think
36.
He is.
36.
I think
even at 36,
he still does look good.
He still does look very good, and I do think Ireland. We've talked about it before, should involve he who shall not be named once again. But nevertheless, Johnny Sexton can make it to the next World Cup.
Yeah. I think he might actually make it as the starter of the next World Cup.
I wonder if Johnny Sexton, when it's all said and done, will have made the most money from actually playing rugby.
Per minute kind of thing.
Not even per minute, just like in total career earnings because of the position he plays and his longevity. Mm. And he's always playing for Ireland. So people have played for longer. maybe they picked up a big deal in France, like say Wilkinson did, and that's great. But he finished at 34, didn't he? Something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas here is Sexton, not the height of his powers.
Sexton went off to an big coin in France for a couple of years.
He did, yeah.
Then came back on big
and
coin.
And bigger coin.
And they get the came back on bigger coin. And they do that tax thing in Ireland where if you play for 10 years in Ireland cumulatively, you get a lump sum on retirement.
Yeah. So if you're
equivalent to like the average of your highest 10 years in one lump sum or something like that.
It's so weird.
So Johnny Sexton's got like
so completely
tax,
unfair.
Like got like a tax free $500,000 coming his way.
Mm.
So
I'll tell you who could be the highest earner of all time. Could be Marrow.
Yeah.
Which would make Nigel Ray an even more wealthy man, of course.
Oh no, if you take you've got to strip out the endorsements, I think.
Okay.
So it's just be purely rugby. So international.
I still think you
club.
Might be right, but it might end up being Marrow.
It could be Marrow.
He's so durable. Touch wood, don't get injured, Marrow.
Could be Charles Pearsall. Charles Pearsall's like, you know, but man, he's had a few barren years playing tin pot rugby in New Zealand where they pay you like 30 grand or something.
He left New Zealand at like 23 or 24 though.
Yeah.
So.
And also Ulster, Wasps, 6 months here.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some big earners, but I'm pretty sure when it's all said and done, Johnny Sexton at the height of the rugby pay structure for 2 decades, that's going to take some beating.
Mm.
There'll be some guys in France actually. What am I talking about? There's going to be many guys in France.
Well, yeah. Someone like Andre Pollard is reportedly on well over £1 million. Cheslin Colby.
What about your boy Goosen?
Johan Usen, yeah.
He must have made a fortune in the fertiliser business.
Can we count his commercial manager role on
a farm?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'd have to know more about the farm work, quote unquote.
Bloemfontein Farm.
Yeah. Excellent.
I think it might end up being Colby.
Colby. You're but right. Then Colby,
he's only about 25, 26 now.
He's young. He's on mega, mega money, and he has been for a long time. He won't be still playing when he's 36.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
And did Toulouse really pay that much? Yes.
Who knows with Toulouse at the moment?
Why?
It could end up being Adam Coleman again, but we'll get on to
it. Could be Adam Coleman.
If his reported wages are anywhere remotely accurate.
I'd love it to be someone like semi-obscure. Not semi-obscure, but like, so I tell you what, he'll be right at the top.
Semi-obscure, good Fijian centre.
Right, here's one you wouldn't have thought of, but maybe. John Afoa.
Afoa is a good shout.
Carl Heyman. Someone like that.
Yeah.
Dan Cole's probably on a shed load still.
Dan, I mean, you obviously got to factor in the inflation in, well, just inflation at the minute, but inflation in rugby wages.
The daily inflation.
But Dan Carter as well. Again, he didn't play till Johnny Sexton's age.
He did.
About 400.
He did play.
Well, he dialed it in for a couple of years.
He played, yeah, but he was dialing it in for Racing 92.
Do you know where the saying, dialed it in,
no,
comes from?
No,
I found this out, and I'm going to give credit to the man. I had a long conversation with Mark Evans, right? And
humble brag.
Yeah, I don't mind, because every time I talk to him, he teaches me something new, right? Dialing in is a journalistic term. So apparently, if you went to the newsroom, the press room in Twickenham back in the day, there was just loads of phones. And what they would do, they'd pick up the phone and they'd literally dial in the match report, because you couldn't email it. So you'd watch the game, you pick up the phone, then you dial it in. So
what does that mean? You would annotate to someone who sat at the other end writing it down.
Exactly right.
Wow. Type it away.
Yeah, because I was thinking like, you couldn't do that. But actually, yes, yeah, that's of course exactly you could.
How did that mean? If that was the only way to do it, how did it become a derogatory term?
Well,
in a sense?
I'm glad you asked. So this is how I've come to the conclusion at least. So that's what sports reporters had to do, because it's the quickest way of getting it into the first edition. But if you're a lazy journalist, but a big name, you could potentially dial it in from home. So if you've got to write your write your column, and you're
coming
to
the office and type that up.
Yeah, forget that. I'm literally going to phone it in.
Yeah.
So I think that's...
Okay.
And I found out another one today, if you're interested.
I'm interested.
Moonlighting.
Okay, hold on. So this is where... So moonlighting to mean as in, I'm a fireman, but I moonlight as a bricklayer in my spare time.
Yeah.
So moonlighting. Oh, so that will be, you have a day job and then you go and do another job at night.
Yes, basically. Yep, you're not far off. But why? What's the So the origin of it, right, was fracking. So in, I think, the 40s, or was it 50s, someone designed basically a torpedo, which you drop down a mine, and the blast would go outwards. And this was the first rudimentary fracking device.
Gas extraction.
Yes. So people were copying this, and it must have been some sort of proprietary technology. But to make sure no one saw them, they did it under the cover of night, so it became moonlighting. And that is moonlighting.
Doesn't sound like a very efficient way to get to extract gas.
How else do you fracture shale rock?
Well, that's with water, isn't it?
It is. I'm reading a book at the moment about fracking, which is
I wish there was more fracking.
Let's not get into it. let's really not get into that.
And from energy independence or lack of. You were going to say, right, we've dealt with the game, so go on. The front row situation with Italy that saw them go down to 13 men. Just one question I'm going to pose, because I can't remember the order of events. Do you think there's any possibility that whether the Italian captain or the Italian players or whatever didn't know that they would have to drop a man and were trying to pull a fast one by saying, oh no, none of our props can go at hooker? Because the only reason I was thinking it is asking a hooker to go prop is a very, very different thing from asking a prop to go hooker. Albeit, I'm not trying to belittle how difficult it is being at hooker. I've played there many times myself. But I know that nowadays, when you see a scrum half put in, the hookers don't hook.
Okay.
So you're just standing there with square feet.
Well, the hookers do hook now. It's a legal requirement to hook. Which is, so if you don't strike the ball, it's either a penalty or free kick.
According to the laws.
Yeah. But it has been enforced recently, and it is.
Has it?
Yeah, I think it has,
really?
Actually.
I just see scrum halves putting it through the second row's legs. Maybe that's the Prem. Anyway, to the general point, do you think there's any chance Italy were trying to pull a slight fast one and box themselves into a corner they couldn't then get out of? Or do you think it was totally legit?
So I think maybe they didn't realise the consequences, they didn't realise whether they were trying to pull a fast one or not, but I don't think they'd comprehended what it actually
would
mean.
Well, the hooker was sent off, and the other hooker was legitimately injured.
Legitimately injured, yeah.
So what would be the fast one, saying that,
oh, we don't, trying to go to uncontested, by saying, oh, both our hookers, we can't fulfil that position, thinking they'll be able to go to uncontested, and then, oh well, you're going to have to lose a man then.
So I think you know my thoughts on this because did you listen to my voice notes on the group? Okay. So do you want me to say that or do you want me to go?
You say whatever you want to say.
Yeah. No, well, I was just trying to think which way to go about this.
Because my thought is am I being fair to say props shouldn't worry about hooking? Hookers, I totally understand being concerned about propping.
I don't know if I agree with that, you know.
Surely a tight head can hook.
Yeah, hooking is a little bit more uncomfortable. Here is my overall view on the whole situation. So on that, I'm not going to... Do you know what? I'm not going to accept the premise of the question.
Okay, fair enough.
I
suppose it's only speculation and it's he said, she said anyway. Yeah. And actually, I shouldn't... Yeah,
No, it doesn't matter. The premise is one harder than the other. I mean, technically it should be. I think for professional athletes who play front row, you should be playing all three positions. And I do get, and this is where your point comes in, isn't it? You can get some small Harry Thackers who just could not play, you said, probably. Yeah. Maybe have a go at tight head, maybe.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right. There are, getting a hooker out to prop would probably be a little bit more difficult. Getting a prop into hooker, it is tricky because you've got to build the scrum around you and they won't break feet now and they've got to strike and all the rest of it.
So it is
tricky. But ultimately, I think rugby has pushed itself into a corner here, both in the international sphere, which we saw today, but all the way down to level 8, level 9, all the way down. Because the number one reason that games are called off outside of weather, but might even include weather, is not being able to raise the front row. Because we mystify it and we scare ourselves witless. It's kind of a moral panic which sprang up in the same way that, can you remember like two or three decades ago, everyone was worried about violent VHS tapes making kids go crazy. And therefore we had to have regulation and whatnot. Well, for whatever reason it is, people lost their minds about scrimmaging a long time ago. It's not safe, you need training. And I can tell you right now, the training for front row, it's not like you've been to Bud Seal School. You haven't strengthened your neck. You haven't done any of these things. You just go and play front row.
Well, yeah, I was
just go and play front row.
I remember playing a game at Hooker, and we had our tight head prop went down injured, and the replacement prop was injured as well. And yeah, Rob, and I remember basically it was we just had a little huddle. Like, well, I'll have a go.
I'll
have a go. Yeah. I got mullered, but
that's what you learn. Yeah. There's no other way, right? So, and this is a broader rugby point. We have scared coaches senseless, right, to the point that they don't want to be putting lads in front row who've never played there before. I'll put anyone into front row because I do it myself. Just go and do it. Like, when I played front row, the only reason I did it is because the front row that we had originally was in such disgusting shape. I thought, well, if he can do it, I can definitely do it. There's no two ways about this. And I was right. I played on the wing. Like, it was the easiest transition. And the lower down you are, the easier it is to do. The fact that nobody...
Lower levels, I...
Yeah, but then as you get higher level, I guess the relative difference... I mean, look, Joe Marler got absolutely battered when he went over to Tighthead.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Yeah. He is amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure...
He knows what Tightheads are trying to do to him as well.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure if he spent, like, 5 minutes every week doing it, he'd be more than competent.
For 6 months of training, he should be able to do that.
6 months, I reckon...
A few months of training.
Well...
A day.
One day.
But now Andrew Porter is the living, breathing proof, and it just demonstrates what an incredible specimen he is.
We need to stop telling everyone it's scary to play front row. It's not scary to play front row. Let me tell you how ridiculous the front row situation is. We played a team this weekend. I'm not going to say the name of the team because it's probably not fair on the bloke who came on. And the two starting front rows, they're just two starting front rows. The opposition tighthead went off, and on came this other guy. And he bound up, and he didn't know the calls. So he was going with, if I get these calls wrong now, it'll be embarrassing. It used to be, back in the day, crouch, touch, pause, engage, right? Those calls have not been in circulation for about 8 years now.
Yeah.
About 8 years.
So 2014 or something they went out?
These are the calls that this guy knew. And... he was considered to be safer to come on the field of play. A guy maybe mid-30s, didn't look like a top-class athlete to me. That is safer than just getting the thick-set centre or the thick-set back row to push. This is nuts. It is nuts. Like, across the entire league now, in the entire game, people need to be getting their better players to play props. Up in the national leagues, right? There was a club that I know of who had a front row crisis, started borrowing front rows off the opposition team. Instead of getting the most capable athletes to go in, what they were doing is they were getting a guy who called himself a prop from the lower teams. He has no business playing at that standard. It's nuts. And the sooner we get rid of this idea that, oh, it's the dark arts, oh, it's really mysterious. It's not. Bend over and push. and you'll find out some little tricks here or there, but ultimately bend over and push, and if you're strong you should be all right.
And that would have made this game, had one of the two tight heads that Italy had in their squad been willing to go to Hooker, this would have been a much better overall spectacle.
Exactly. And we are talking, of course, about Porter and Furlong, absolute assassins.
Yeah,
but just spend 5 minutes a week doing it. Like, just spend 5 minutes a week doing it, you will be fine.
I'm on that because I've seen some takes on this that is the laws need to be changed.
Yes, I've got a law change for this.
I'm not entirely certain that's really necessary.
Well, what was the game on? Was it on that Super Saturday? It was when we were in Bucharest, that Wales France game.
Yeah, yeah.
Where France allegedly bent the rules their way. And
was it a head injury for a head injury for one of the props?
And they managed to go uncontested and didn't lose a player, and everyone was up in arms then. And it's not ideal, and I don't want to have a 24th player on the bench, so you've got one in every front row position, because there will always be a situation where enough players get injured that this can happen anyway.
Seven reserve hookers, just in case.
Dead.
Just in case.
So
there's no silver bullet, is my point. I'm quite happy with it being as it is. I kind of agree with you that actually it should be the job of every front row player to be competent to a degree particularly, I think, props going to Hooker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Competent in order now, to be safe.
There are other things which mess this game up, of course, which is, and it only occurred to me 2 minutes after the sub had been made, no Hooker means no line-out, effectively. And that is much more serious.
Although the fella throwing in did all right.
Yeah. Have you seen Joe Mauler holding a ball? Sorry to pick on Joe Mauler again, but he was the last guy I remember who's a non-hooker.
He did it in the Scotland game.
He's holding this ball like he's never seen one before.
Like a loaf of bread.
Yeah, I've got issues with Joe Mauler this week. Very funny guy, fantastic rugby player.
He
doesn't do a full deep squat when he squats.
We've seen this.
England proudly posted a video.
Zero!
England proudly posted a video of him doing a back squat. And hey, listen, week of a game, take it easy. That's fine. But then just don't post a video and go, wow, look how much Joe Mauler can lift on a back squat when he only does a quarter squat.
Wasn't that... It was a box squat. It was a...
What's a box squat?
As in, he squatted onto a box and then sat up. So squat onto a box or a bench.
Well, he shouldn't have a box under him.
It's a different exercise. It is just a different... Anyway. It's like saying kipping pull-ups aren't real pull-ups.
They are real pull-ups.
Well, they're not real pull-ups, but they're just a different exercise.
Yes. Yeah, but that weight that... That weight is less impressive as a half squat than if it was a full squat. It would be, very impressive.
It would
as
be
a full
incredibly
squat.
Impressive as a full squat.
It's kind of like, okay, as a half squat.
He's a very good half squatter. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, and I would not.
I'd like to have his half squat.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Very much so.
Yeah, where were we up to? Actually, yeah, so some laws.
I only do ass to grass, so I don't actually know what my half squat is.
Exactly right. Have you seen the knees over toes guy?
No, but he was on, what's it called? Was it Rogan?
Yeah, utterly fascinating. Have you seen him?
That was interesting.
Let's leave this conversation.
We'll leave it there. But I have changed the way I squat since watching that, and I feel stronger for it because knees going further over your toes, the bar stays right near right near the middle of my body, and I feel stronger doing it.
Funny enough, because I don't listen to anyone anyway, I was squatting wrong to start with, which turns out I was squatting right. So I knew I was right, even when I was...
when you were wrong.
Yeah, so it turns out I was right. Right, so let's talk about these laws a second. Have you seen the matrix that the World Rugby used to tell you if you lose a player or not?
Is that the one with Keanu Reeves?
Yes. the ones and zeros in that are more simple than the ones that they've issued to the referees. So they've got this big grid of like, when do you lose a player and whatnot? And I tried to read it. It's like, that's not going to happen. And the second thing which got me was Italy having 8 players into the scrum. So I'm sure I have seen a yellow card occur where they drop one from the scrum. Have I?
Yeah. You play without an 8.
So the laws say that when you go to uncontested, must have 8.
Yes.
And I think they've got the wrong end of the stick here. I think the law should be no more than 7 in the back line. So if you are...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so if you are playing a fully contested game with no one missing, you're starting 15, one of the things I'd like to see are more teams deciding just to drop a man from the scrum because they're so confident. If you're absolutely dominant, drop a man from the scrum and have your big ball carrier into the back line, because I think that'd be amazing. What do you do as an opposition? Do you take your flanker out, even though you're a monster? What do you do? And I think that's my thought. With a yellow card, you're allowed to drop a guy. But in this situation, when Italy had 13 guys, it is ludicrous to make them have 8 people in the scrum.
Yeah.
Now, the counter to that is if you abuse the laws, you could potentially have no people in the scrum because it's uncontested. Why even bother with two props?
With one, just have one defensive line.
But I think the remedy to this is no more than 7 players out of the scrum would fix that.
Okay,
that's actually quite... I actually don't disagree with that.
It was ridiculous.
I don't. Ed Whelan's emailed an Ireland fan and a Leinster fan. Says love the pod, blah blah blah, and he's just talking about this law. He said, the law by World Rugby to force 2 players off as a result of an uncontested scrum because of a red card was covered well by yourselves in one of your many off-season pods. I'll have to go back and listen to that. I can't even remember what he said. He said, without wanting to rake over those ashes too much, it's now clear, in Ed's opinion, that law is not a good one. The view from all the commentators on his side of the Irish Sea is that it seemed entirely unfair and ruined any chance of a good game. No issue with the officiating, simply a terrible law.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So, on the game, I've got quite strong opinions on red cards don't ruin games unless a team is disorganised anyway. So, poor teams get exponentially worse when they start losing players. Mm. Now, obviously, in this instance, Ireland were 30 points better than Italy anyway.
Yeah, to start with.
To start with. So this has doubled their benefit, the difference between the two teams, but only when because they went down two players. And you lose two players for 60 minutes of the match, and actually they were down to 12. They had three men off the park for 10 of those minutes. This was never going to be a good contest before that, anyway. So this just exacerbated a problem that already existed.
Here's the point that I've made before, and you haven't actually agreed with it, but I do think in a time when we're absolutely obsessed with danger and player safety, the first red card was dished out because we want the game to be perceived to be safe rather than we want it to be safe. I think
it's the same thing.
Well, I'm not sure. Because I can't see how... I mean, if you looked at, say, Toby Faletau yesterday, Toby Faletau made me think of this. He is running like an absolute beast, and he hits contact. Two lads pick him up, and they just throw him about. You know, you're talking about one unbelievable athlete going into two absolute monsters. And if these guys catch you, my word, do they catch you. And it happens to the best of the best. Mm. So to ask Italy to play against a full-throated Irish defence with 15 guys when they've got 12, there's got to be a safety issue. There has to be a safety issue. I mean, where are you going to find the gaps? Where are you going to... If you've got the ball, what are your options? You've got to kick it away, or you've got to smash yourself into the Italian defence. You can't... Rugby automatically becomes the thing which the instructors in the RFU Level 1 and Level 2 course say it's not, which is an evasion game with contact. There is no chance you can evade the Irish defence if you've got 12 guys. You've just got to go headlong. And this is exactly what they tried to get rid of. Exactly what they tried to get rid of. So at some point, there's got to be a health and safety issue about carding these guys.
Well, my view on the cards is, I've said this many times, I understand why they've brought in this to try and quote-unquote change behaviour. Don't like it. Red cards for egregious foul play. Things like stamping,
yeah,
punching, biting, and then throw the book at them in the...
put them on report, like rugby league.
Yeah, and throw the book at them in the disciplinary panels midweek when they're having all the biscuits. But the borderline ones, I'd lean more to yellow or penalty only.
I think you can have a maximum of two men off the field. A maximum. After that, you've got to have a mandatory replacement, and then you can't come back. And then if you can't do the mandatory replacement because you've got a bench full of injured people, then you go on report.
No, because that could arguably incentivise just in a World Cup final when their star fly half, you got your two men down, just go in with impunity, just go and take the head off their star player.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, occupational hazard. I just think that the situation of having 12 men against 15 running into contact time and time again, it can't be good.
Then again, it was Sale v Wasps last year. Sale were down to 12 and Wasps couldn't score. Or was it the other way around? Wasps were down to 12 and Sale couldn't score.
No.
I think Sale won. They came back when they had...
Yeah, because Wasps
two or three
wanted
men off.
To go wide continuously. They didn't punch up the middle. I remember this well.
Yeah.
But Sale were down to 13, I think. 13 they went down to. And somehow Wasps didn't score and Sale walked away with that victory.
Yeah, which is to Phil's point that Italy are just a significantly poorer side than Ireland.
Yeah.
And it just exacerbated what was already there.
I think going down to 13 is fine. Not fine, but it's, you know, and the better after that, it has to be mandatory replacements and that player can't come back. And, you know, you're also going to get a massive fine. You know, if we can prove that you went out to annihilate the star flyer half like Brendan Flowers did. Is it Brendan Flowers? Is that a singer?
Brendan Flowers from The Killers.
Yeah, not him.
Yeah, Ben Flowers.
Ben Flowers.
On Lance Ohio. Yeah.
I mean, you can get banned for life or whatnot. I mean, that's the most egregious assault I've seen on a rugby field.
That was,
I'm impressed you even mentioned even a name that was close to someone in music.
Yeah. I'm amazed.
Dean Grohl. Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
As well.
Just on the... losing more and more players, if it's I don't know, 15-6 or something like that, there probably is a safety issue there. There is probably a tipping point, but these guys are only going to be carrying a small proportion more than they would have been ordinarily.
Mm.
And so it's like Thierry Dussoutoir when he makes 30 tackles in a game. Is there a safety issue around
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you shouldn't make that many tackles because that's three times as many as an average player would in a game at most.
I suppose it depends. If you lose, if you've got three ball carriers in a pack and two of them go off.
I've got one ball carrier.
Arguably, that guy's going to double his work rate.
Triple his work rate.
Well, yeah, but that's impossible. But yeah, but it's not so much the work rate. It's the fact that when you have more players, there's more attacking options and space occurs. Whereas when you have no attacking options and you've just got to run at the wall.
But the thought to that is that you run out the space.
Where is it?
Well, there's more of it, as you just
said.
No. There's none of it.
On the defence, there's 15, okay, yeah. 15 against 12.
Yeah, I know. Well, a lot of...
It's like playing British Bulldog, one guy against 15. Where is the space?
I'd like to see... I don't imagine Italy carried more in this game than in a normal game.
God, no.
Because they never had the ball.
Do you know what I would have done if I was Italy? I'd have gone full Argentina 2007.
Seven? Up and under all day long.
Yeah.
Now
with Stephen Jones's greatest fly half ever to play the game, Juan Martin Hernandez, putting up bombs.
Yes. Yeah, spiral bomb all day long.
That's all. It wasn't even a spiral bomb. It was just, and if you catch it, what do you do? Pass it back on and kick it up in the air again. And keep going.
A lot of people have tried. Have put the focus on Italy's bravery in the face of that adversity. It doesn't mask the fact they conceded 57 points, got absolutely panned in what became a non-event.
Lamaro should be lauded for his defensive effort on the field and his work rate, even if he's not knowing the laws or not appreciating the laws, I think probably cost the team a little bit there. Or maybe it was none of the props were willing or able to safely play.
Yeah, it's the thing, we'll never know. We'll never know what could have, should have, would have happened.
But Mike Lowry. Looks awesome. Mm-hmm. He's so electric. He's so
good. Some small boys for Ireland.
Yeah, because Craig Casey coming off the bench is not a big boy.
SBs, rather than BSBs.
SBs, strong boys.
Small boys.
Strong boys. I just go strong boys.
Yeah.
Small, strong boys.
So,
small, strong boys, yes. Yeah.
A good but predictable win for Ireland. It was predictable before this, before the red card and the player taken off.
For many people, Scotland-France would have been predictable, but actually I think, it was no surprise to anyone how good France were. Maybe disappointing.
I don't know. They always surprise me. I mean, when they score those tries, it doesn't matter how they score those tries, they're still amazing.
The first two were otherworldly. They were absolutely amazing, those first two.
You can see why they love Mo Farna so much.
Mo Farna.
So he's playing out of position, but he just has to play. And they've got so many players like this now who are just mercurial. They seem to have a team full of Anthony Watsons, which is like Anthony Watson, even if he doesn't play, but he's available. It's like, yeah, got to get Anthony Watson playing.
Got to get him.
He's just the best in the world. He's just the best in the world if he plays.
You got to get Pinot in there.
Yeah.
Got to get Pinot in there.
Ficky's got to play.
Yeah, Ficky has to play.
I loved his try.
Yeah.
I loved his try. Yeah. The arcing run. Everyone is looking at each other like, who's going to tackle this guy?
Yeah.
Someone's going to have to make a decision to tackle this guy soon.
Where's he going? That's where he's going. Yeah.
Please don't be married. Don't straighten up yet. It was terrifying for everyone involved.
And it's not so long ago that Vakatawa was like the best centre in the world. Don't even need him.
Yeah, where is he? He's available.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
Don't need him.
By the way, Jonathan Dante. There's a guy that could play prop. Like, there is a guy. It is safer to play Jonathan Dante prop than bring back a guy who's not played for 8 years.
Yeah.
He was 100% safer thing.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be a prop that can play hooker or a hooker that can play prop. It can be a centre.
Jonathan Dante.
Centre that can play prop.
Easy.
Aldrit would do a job.
Damn right he would.
Bastereau would have done a job.
Yeah.
Tuilagi, I'd back him.
Tuilagi would be, I mean, look, if Bevan Rod can play loosehead prop, I'm telling you now, Manu can play loosehead prop.
Manu can play whatever position
and
he wants.
And Jansi van Rensburg.
Yeah, he definitely
can. Oh, yeah.
100%. Like, I don't think he's as big as he was. He might be a little bit chunkier.
Remember when he came to England, how excited we were about his quads
from the
Lions?
I went to Carrington in his first stint over here. So remember, he had like one of those weird little contracts that Dimes used to get them on.
Oh, yeah. He had like a 3-month deal, didn't he?
And he's sitting there eating away in Carrington in his shorts. And the side, I mean, you've not seen anything like it. And this is like him in his absolute prime, yeah, ripping up defences for the Lions. Like, wow.
He was in amazing shape.
Oh, unreal. Now, that guy could play tight head, loose head.
Anywhere.
Absolutely anywhere.
Lau Mappy.
Yes,
Lau Mappy, definitely. Yeah.
So there are plenty of these guys. And look, it's worth hundreds of thousands of pounds to you. Why don't you do it? It's your job.
Scotland and Ireland don't really have any of those prototype players, though.
I don't know. Do you not think? Mind you, he's a bit too tall. Duan.
He could play second row.
Iron Duke could play second row.
Yeah.
And he could definitely play number 8.
Back to France. I'm pretty certain now that my favourite player on the planet is Wocky. I just love him. I just love him. Like
Wocky is class.
He was at one point a destroyer of worlds at 6. Well, whichever way the French use their 6 and 7.
Yeah, yeah.
But just this absolute animal who used to absolutely ruin people. And the French have always liked a jumper in the back row. But now he's just a line out machine. And you know it's going to go to him. And no one does anything about it. Ever. Like just. Me, please. He's calling the lineouts. He looks ace. He looks absolutely ace. The balance that they've got is incredible.
It is very impressive. The combination of athleticism and just sheer mass and size.
And star power.
These two interesting. I'm not convinced that on Francois Cross and Jelonch as the 6 and 7.
I like Jelonch.
I'm not sure that's the best flanker partnership in the tournament, and I'm not sure it's as good as some of their other combinations. Like that 6 and 7 combination is not as good as Dupont and Entomac or Donty and Ficou or Pinot and Mofana or Pinot and Villiers or Marchand and Bay and Antonio. Just not sure it's of the same caliber.
I'd agree with you there. Well, isn't that frightening that they've got improvement they can make?
Yes, they can.
Well, now, I think with now I might be speaking out of turn here. Is Jelonch not primarily a number 8? I think he's number 8 who they just need to get him in. And the fact is, Aldrit is ace.
Aldrit is your number 8.
He's such a workhorse.
Yeah. Yeah, who's the guy that I'm missing now? Toulon flanker. He was captain.
Olivon.
Oh yeah, Olivon.
Olivon.
He had a long term injury, didn't he?
Yeah.
He is a very good player.
He'll be the one that is immediately bolted in, and I do think they keep Jelonch because he is quite an awesome line option. And Aldrit. So.
Aldrit's playing.
And they've got Bai, as you mentioned. He's awesome at and Marchand at breakdown. So good.
Now this game, I think Scotland, obviously at the end of the day, 36-17, and it was only the Duan try on 80 minutes that made the scoreline look a bit more respectable, but it could have gone differently because there was there's those two early tries which were amazing from France in the first 15 minutes, and you thought, well, that's it, it's game over.
Done.
But then Scotland come back and they score the Rory Darge try. And then, 2 minutes to half time, the do and break, the offload to Harris, and the pass. And I think he doesn't need to pass it when he does. Mm. I think he passes it too early, and Hogg should have taken it. But it's right at the.
That is devastating, isn't it?
But that if they score that, they go in at half time 17-12 up. But what actually happened? They drop that. Ficou scores 2 minutes into injury time at the end of that first half, and then immediately after half time, Dante scores within 2 minutes. And so it goes from Scotland could have been 5 points up to they find themselves 14 points down, and it was game over.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's not your day when your best player drops it.
With the try line beckoning. Yeah.
Like, he is their best player. He's
a captain.
You see it at all levels. When your best player drops it, it's just not your day.
Yeah, and you did see as well, obviously, losing their two starting second rows doesn't help. Then losing, obviously, Jamie Rich is missing.
Matt Ferguson.
Ferguson's missing. Hamish Watson drops out 2 days before or the day before.
Stop testing.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, so God, stop it.
Their pack is, well, it's more than decimated because it's a lot more than one in ten. The pack, it's like the whole of the back five of their pack has gone. And you can't really afford to do that against France.
But, like, you know, these things happen. And I remember it happening with Wales back in the day, and they would get decimated by injury or whatnot, and then the next lot would come in. And even worse is retirement. Do you know when you have retirement of the golden generation of Ireland? Oh, well, Ireland will be rubbish for years.
Forever.
And actually, it just means more people can come in and get international experience. I don't think this is any different.
It'll be good for their long-term experience.
Yeah.
Then the short-term, you are then playing France with five of your ideal starting pack are missing.
Which isn't great.
That doesn't help.
So, Andy Christie played.
Yes.
Does anyone know where Andy Christie got his formative rugby? Which club he was part of?
Sorry, I'm going to assume, probably wrongly, that he's from either West London or St Albans.
Close, though. You're on the right lines.
Who's the team that you said everyone hates?
Marlowe.
No. Not everyone hates Marlowe. Tim very much likes Marlowe. Tim's a big Marlowe fan.
Lovely part of the world.
Yeah, well, yeah. nope, not Marlowe. A team that we have a bit of a connection with.
Okay.
We've got many friends that play for this team.
Bournemouth.
Nope. That would be cool, though.
Many friends. Old Bedian. Old... What are they called?
Old Reds.
Old Bristolians.
Correct.
Really?
Old Bristolians. Yeah, he's an OB's boy.
Not Old Bedians.
How did he end up at Sarries? He obviously moved...
He was much too good for obedience, I think, still he is.
I mean, he probably, like, Harrow offered him a scholarship and then he went into Saris.
I don't know enough about the guy. I did notice that Obedians were trying to make
Old Bristolians.
Old Bristolians. OBs were trying to make his debut all about them, which is classic OBs, really.
Absolutely. Did he ever go to their end of season dinner?
I don't know. I wonder if he was an instigator in the incident in the Christmas dinner that no one's allowed to talk about.
No one could ever talk about.
No one can ever talk about the port and the wine, which instigated that incident, which no one's ever allowed to talk about.
And the dresses.
And you're not allowed to talk about that. Or the slip and slide. You're not allowed to talk about that. Don't talk about that. So Andy Christie played. There's something for you.
I'm just going to pepper in another question from Don Barfield at this point.
Before we go on, Andy Christie, another one of those players who we were misled about his weight and size. I can't remember what he was. We were told he was, but I had to tweet Andy Christie at the start of the season to make sure that we got his right weight and size.
So yeah, he was more than 100 kilos. I think he said.
Yeah.
I don't accept anything unless you physically weigh someone like you did with Sam Simmons.
Exactly.
He's definitely not 90 kilos, Sam Simmons.
Nope.
Just one thing from... mentioned Ed Whelan's email before, but he did say at the end, PS, at Phil, Mike Lowry.
Yes.
Love Mike Lowry.
Dom, back to one of these questions, and it seems apt, since we're talking about France. With a BSB hat on, name the heaviest players listed in the squads for the Six Nations.
Okay.
So Uwini Antonio.
Uwini Antonio, 145 kg.
England.
Will be Will Stewart.
Will Stewart, 132 kg.
Oh, Tommy Francis.
Tommy Francis, nice. 135 kg.
Xander Ferguson.
Xander Ferguson, 126 kg.
It's got to be
Ty Furlong.
No.
Porter.
Andrew Porter is Ireland's biggest, strongest boy.
I think Andrew Porter.
How heavy is 125 kg?
Wow, Phil, I'm not having that. I think Furlong.
The shape of Porter is just.
He's turning into just a world class player, isn't he?
There was a few raised eyebrows, including from me, when he was picked for the Lions. Fully see it.
Dominator.
Fully see it.
Can play both sides.
Yes, that.
And some of us in 2016 came back onto a podcast after the under-20s and raved about him and Stockers.
I
Andrew Porter and Stockers.
I genuinely cannot believe that you went to a tournament with all the best and brightest young stars, and you picked one.
I picked him and Stockers.
And Jordy Barrett, I think you were raving about.
And Jordy Barrett. And Harry Malander.
Yeah, well, we don't get them all right.
Yeah, get some wrong.
He might come back, you know, though. He might come good.
I'd love to see him come back. Oh, that was sad news this week. George Kruis retiring.
Yeah.
At 32.
Hang on. But it wasn't sad news, was it?
Well, it is because it means...
It is, because I want a BSB as our tight head lock.
Look. So, what I mean, though, is as far as I can tell, he's gone out on his own terms.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I mean, like, he's made a loan of coin in Japan. He's got his business with the Welsh second row, Dom Day.
Yeah.
He's got his business with Dom Day, and obviously it's doing very well and needs his attention. And
which is awesome. It's how everyone should want to retire.
All of that's amazing. But where I want him to retire, lifting the World Cup in 18 months' time.
England's chances of lifting a World Cup in 18 months' time would be enhanced by the presence of George Kruis.
I don't think it's over. I don't think it's over yet, because George Kruis is an enticing prospect now. Almost every player who is playing at that level requires their money to live, to pay their mortgage. You know, it's an inherent part of their strategy. They have to play, not because necessarily they're enjoying it, but because, you know, there's a monetary necessity. Now, if George Kruis is already looked after financially, he might come back for the right reasons for less money. I don't think that this is actually over yet, because with a World Cup around the corner, why don't you see if you can say to George Kruis, look, 6-month contract, let's get you really fit. We'll pay you a little bit, but you'll get fit, you'll get in the England team, and then you win the World Cup, and then you retire.
Mm.
I don't think it's over.
Well, there was some other interesting news this week or last week that Don Barrow.
So Don Barrow's been at Sale. Have I told you this?
Yeah, we mentioned this last week.
No, a few weeks ago. I mean, he's been there for quite a while now.
And Alex
training.
And Alex Groves is
that. Right. So I don't like mid-season signings, as you well know.
MWDP.
But
fine.
Good. Great show. Great show.
Any more for any more on this? On the Scotland France game. Right.
We didn't pick the Italian heaviest player.
Oh, it wasn't listed in this.
Okay, I'm not sure I'd be able to. Castro Giovanni.
I don't like talking about referees generally.
Uh-oh. However,
do you think Carl Dixon is the best English referee? And I scratched my head a couple of times, and more's the point. I think it just highlights that how good Wayne Barnes has been.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think how good Luke Pearce is.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like Mike Carley. I think he's very good. I quite like all of them, all of them.
I honestly don't think Ridley's we've got a bad referee in the Premiership.
Yeah, they're all...
I don't...
They're very good.
If it was Tempest or if it was any of them, really...
Tempest's good.
They're all very, very good.
Yeah.
It is interesting to see that they all do things slightly differently. I tell you what, comms... Right, let's just go back to the Italy game a second, right? Comms in the Italy game. It's a difficult game to commentate on because you've got to keep the excitement going. You've got to explain to some new watchers of the sport what's going on, that this game is effectively over. It's 20 minutes, go away. You can't say that, but you kind of got to say it tactfully. You've got to find an angle, haven't you, where there's a reason to watch this game. And one of the angles they came up with is, oh, the referee will be desperate to tip it in Italy's favour. Like, no, he won't. No, he won't. And you can't be saying this.
His assessor in the stand will definitely let him get away with that.
What happened here? Oh, I just gave the penalty to Italy because, well, you know, they deserved it more. Like, no, that's not a thing that happens. And it's not a thing that you should say happens either.
Yeah. So that was a Georgian referee first.
Was it?
First Georgian referee.
I thought he was the best referee of the weekend.
I didn't even notice him, which is high praise indeed.
Exactly.
He had Matt Carley and Christoph Ridley on the flanks, obviously experienced referees in their own right. You could see when he was getting the red card decision, he made sure, he took quite a while to get to it, but he made sure that everyone was aligned, which was the right thing to do.
Brilliant.
Neil Johnston was not alone among Scotland fans, not very happy with the English official at Murrayfield.
Hmm.
For example, he said in this email here, how can he award France? We got emails several emails, one after the other. And the second email said, another beer, another shocker. So I think Neil was enjoying the game and letting us know what he thought as he went, which I appreciate. He said, how can he award France a penalty at the line-out for taking the lifter in the air and warn France about holding him in the air too long? There was a few moments like that. We're going to hold Wokey up long enough that the referee needs to have a word with you after he's penalised Scotland for taking the man.
The problem with Wokey is he goes up so easily. He stays up for a long time. He gets air.
Yeah.
You've got to catch him on the way down.
You've got to pull him down.
Yeah. He's that good at jumping.
I'll just go back and say that I would prefer to focus on just how good a referee Wayne Barnes was for such a long period of time.
And still is.
He's still alive, yeah?
he's still about.
Okay, yeah, making sure. Okay,
still brilliant. About.
Right, well, let's ditch this podcast because we've got important domestic matters to get to.
Absolutely.
You know where to find us. You know what to do. Thank you very much for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.